Well, again, welcome. Thank you all for coming to the workshop this morning, and thank you, Kurt, for taking the time to organize this. I think when we start thinking about internationalization and study abroad opportunities for our students, I really see that as something that we add to the opportunities for our undergraduates, that other places where students are getting credentialing and certificates don't have the opportunity necessarily to do. So I'm excited to talk a little bit about this. I'll talk about kind of the 30,000-foot level, and I also have to admit right off the bat that I am very biased in the reason that we should do study abroad. I've had the opportunity to do this a number of times with my students. As cliche as it sounds, there are light bulb moments that you don't even anticipate that are going to happen with the students. The things that they learn, the things that they walk away with are things that you may not have anticipated. And I will also offer that for faculty members, it's also very important. So much of our day-to-day, we aren't in a space necessarily of being uncomfortable or not knowing or unsure. Even if you've traveled internationally a number of times to the same country, each time is a new experience. And I think the more that we put ourselves in that space, the better sense we have of what our students are experiencing, even when they're sitting in our classroom and we're just trying to teach them a new concept in horticulture. So I've had the great fortune at Iowa State to travel abroad with my students a number of different times. I would say that each trip has had its ups. All of them have had a down of some sort, and I know we'll talk about some of that today. But I think that what it has given me is a better opportunity to understand the global aspects of horticulture and then also the history that goes into some of the things that happen in these different countries. I grew up in a small town in eastern Washington, went to Washington State University, and I can say that although I lived abroad for a year when I was an undergraduate, these short-term trips have really given me a chance to think differently about my own understanding of the world, and I hope it's made me better as an instructor as well for my students. Kurt mentioned initially, you know, globalization, internationalization, and kind of where do you start? I would offer that if you start with your strategic plan at your institution. If your strategic plan includes something about international experiences, it's going to be a little bit easier to start from there if you're trying to get started doing something or you're trying to build capacity. If it's not in your university's strategic plan, maybe it'd be in your college, or possibly even in a departmental strategic plan. That creates a framework from which you can build. I will say that at Iowa State, we've had the opportunity because of that to use that with our foundation to generate additional funding from donors. They can see that direct connection. So anytime you can use that as framework, I think it's useful. At Iowa State, our students will participate in at least 2 high-impact practices before they graduate. And so study abroad is one of those high-impact practices. This is a list from the NESE, the National Survey of Student Engagement. It also is based on the AACNU, American Colleges and Universities list. So study abroad, learning communities, courses with a community-based project or service learning, internships, undergraduate experiences, and a culminating senior experience. I guess as those questions were initially posed at the beginning of the presentation, if you can think about how you might be able to do a combination of these when you're doing a study abroad, I'll show you some data in just a moment. You really do get more bang for the buck. And I think that there's, with a little bit of creativity, it's pretty interesting what people are able to come up with. So as scientists, it's always good to have some data so we can understand what we're really talking about. This is fairly recent data from 2013. Again, it's based on data that was collected by the National Survey of Student Engagement. And it's from 38 different institutions, large R1 institutions and smaller state colleges. And they were from schools in California, Oregon, and Wisconsin. And you can see it's a pretty good size sample size of a little over 25,000 students. They asked them a number of questions about their experiences generally in college, what they've learned, what their most important experiences have been, and specifically they asked a set of questions about high-impact practices. And so this is, I've got just a couple of charts I want to show about why HIPs, high-impact practices, matter. And these are the self-reported gains by the cumulative participation in HIPs that the students reported. So the three categories left to right are gains in general education, gains in practical competence, and then gains in personal and social development. On a scale of 0 to 100, the red bar on the far left for each of those groups is if the students did not participate in any HIPs. This is just the benefit of going to college, and these are the things that they feel like they have taken away from it. The yellow bar is participating in 1 to 2 high-impact practices. The blue bar is 3 to 4, and then the purple darkest bar is 5 to 6 high-impact practices. And you can see that those continue to increase the more of those that they're participating in. I will say that when I first started doing study abroad, my main focus or my initial focus was on the horticulture content. What more are they going to learn? How's that going to help their discipline? But as I've done more and I've worked with more students over time, that last category in personal and social development is really phenomenal. And seeing those students grow, not only during the pre-departure preparation, but once we're in country, really is phenomenal. I've had students who wouldn't say a word in class, but we get into this international environment and they just blossom. And alternatively, I would say students who seem to be, you know, very aware of themselves and outgoing, when they get into a space that they're not comfortable with, I've seen some of them shut down. So how they deal with that, I think, is really valuable. The next slide is looking at the students' boost in their perception of deep learning and gains by participating in these high-impact practices. So the scale here is 0 to 10. And you can see for all of them, they self-report that there is an increase in their deep learning. The study abroad is the lowest compared to all of these. And I think if we were to tease the data out a little bit more, part of why that is likely because the learning communities, the service learning, and then the student research project, they spend a lot of time with the faculty member in those types of experiences. And we know that that can have a really significant impact on the value to the student themselves. Depending upon the study abroad experience, they may be in Ireland by themselves at a university, as opposed to really interacting with somebody from your home institution. So there's a lot of variability. But I would still argue that all of those are going to be valuable, including the study abroad. The other reason that high-impact practices matter is we've got documentation that it increases your retention rate, your graduation rates, and they have a disproportionately more positive impact on underrepresented students. So at Iowa State, those are students who are multicultural, are first-generation students, and are low socioeconomic status students. So any way that you can find to provide equity to those students so they too can experience those retention and graduation rates, there's really a lot of value in that, and I'd encourage you to think about that as you're doing your work. Just a little bit about study abroad at Iowa State. We have a central study abroad center, which is a unit that reports up to me now. And we also have college study abroad offices. So those are staffed different rates. Some colleges have a lot, others don't. So our central study abroad office really manages a lot of different kinds of programs. We also offer a range of options for our students. The short 7 to 14 day event, those tend to be very popular. Summer internships is an area that we've just started doing. And then year and semester long programs. The summer internships, we work with a third party provider. And what we have found is we have one in particular in Dublin for our business students. The benefit is the students stay at University College Dublin. It helps that institution because they have residence halls that are empty in the summer, and we can fill them with some of our students. So it's a real benefit to both institutions. That's an area I think we will continue to grow. The top picture on the right is a picture from one of my study abroad student trips. We were in the Netherlands. We were getting all geared up to go into a production facility. The students thought that was the funniest thing. I don't know why, you know, safety protection gear is funny, but I can't tell you how much they were laughing about that. The bottom picture is two young women who went on a study abroad trip this last spring semester, last spring break. And this gets at one of the other framing questions we have for today, is how can you integrate it into a class? This is a supply chain management class. The students participate in the course all semester long. They look at a particular product that we sell in the Target store in Ames, Iowa. This year, it was a spatula. So they learn about it, they follow it, they figure out how it's produced. During the trip, they follow the supply chain in reverse. So they start in Ames, Iowa, they go to a distribution center, they go to Minneapolis, where the Target headquarters are, they go to Long Beach out in California and see the port, and then they fly to China and go to three different places there. It is a phenomenal trip, and it really brings home the whole globalization of what they're doing. So the other thing that I've done over the years is talked with our students to figure out what works for them and what doesn't. And so they're pretty candid in talking about, you know, what is good and what isn't. So I wanted to share some of those lessons learned again as you're thinking about this. For the short-term faculty-led programs, pre-departure preparation is essential. We can't expect our students to just pick up, I'll use Iowa State, from Ames, Iowa, go to an international location and be able to get their feet on the ground and be ready and able to function. Language can be an issue. If language isn't an issue, then you've got other cultural things that the students just aren't prepared to deal with. So I think at Iowa State we've developed a really strong program on our pre-departure, and I think it's really supported the students. The other thing to think about is a meaningful in-country experience. As faculty, we have contacts all around the world, but we can't use it just as a jaunt to go visit our friends in other countries. We really need to use it as a way to build competencies for our students. So leverage those relationships if you have them, but think really critically about what can you do in that country that you can't do at your home institution, and use that to shape up the itinerary. They need to be discipline-focused. I mean, they go on horticulture study abroad because they want to see horticulture, not an animal science program. There need to be cultural components. They need to have time in the local pubs or eating with people and sharing a meal. I mean, that's such an important part of those experiences. So if you've got a relationship with somebody at a university, bringing in the students who are at the university to share time. And it also needs to not be overly prescribed. If you're moving from point A to point B to point C in a really quick time sequence, the students don't have time to process what they're experiencing. That may mean you've got to give up a little control, give them a little time and space to think about what they're doing. And I think in the end, the benefit is really strong for the students. That would be one comment I hear on a regular basis. And so we get to that point where we find the sweet spot. It's like, no, you're not just on your own for 12 days in Norway. We're going to do some things, but you will have some time on your own too. The other kind of group of experiences are these semester-long and year-long experiences. There's a few different things that need to be considered here. The most important that I hear from students is there needs to be effective planning and advising before they go. They need to know that if they go, that the courses they take are going to transfer back. They don't want to go there, spend a year, and then not be able to make progress towards their degree completion. There needs to be direct articulation of courses, either horticulture ones or university requirements. The university requirements may be a little bit more difficult to do, but I would encourage you to work with faculty in your department that if a horticulture course that they take in Sweden covers 95% of what you teach in your plant propagation class, that's probably good enough. And so trying to find that balance to make those articulations work. The other thing I would encourage you to think about is assigning flexible credit for students. If they have time and they want to participate in an independent study or a research project with a faculty member at the institution, find a way to make that happen. That makes for a much more enriching experience for the students as well. And then the last part of that is advising assistants when they return. The course transfers, I don't know about you, but at Iowa State, it is a long and arduous journey to work through the process sometime. We need to help the students navigate that. The other thing I've heard from a number of students is they need help figuring out how they're going to readjust to being back, particularly those that have been gone for a semester or for a year. They have a different lived experience now, and so they really need to be able to figure out how to start to interact with their family, their friends, all of the others that don't have that same experience. And I think if you look broadly at those outcomes, I would say that all of these are the types of outcomes that students are going to get from a study abroad experience. Resiliency, there's nothing better than learning how resilient you are when you're lost on the tube in London and you know you really need to get to a particular location and you just can't figure it out. It's compounded when you're in Shanghai and you can't read the language. So that resiliency is important. Curiosity, diverse thinking, the things that they say after they see something is incredibly important, a different production process, what have you. And then I think ultimately those last two are really what we want. We want them to be these globally informed citizens and truly our next generation of leaders. And I think that I would make the case that study abroad certainly has a place for that. I just leave with this last picture. This is the last study abroad trip I went on. I'm not sure I want to do another study abroad because this was the pinnacle study abroad trip. We did a service learning project. We did the design in the semester before. While we were in Ireland, we installed this historic Victorian era border. The comments from the students were not what I had anticipated. I'll paraphrase. I won't get it quite right, but one student said, "It was such a powerful experience because as a student from small town Iowa, he built something in another country that people from all over the world will see." You can't do that in Ames, Iowa. So I think that we'll leave it there and we'll move on to our next presentation.